Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yes!
I already blew out a vocal cord. Better than Hawk and Crowder like spewing up phlegm in the last show. It is! The Alex Dono Show here on 560 WQAM. I don't know why we do this, but the shorter the show is, the busier we make it, right? I mean, sometimes we'll have a four-hour show. We've got a lot of time to just kind of chill and chat and take phone calls. You know, so tonight, I'll be off the air at 8 o'clock because we have Thursday Night Football on this radio station tonight, 8 p.m. Ravens and Bengals tonight. So within those 2 hours, we're going to talk to a lot of people. Cameron Wolf covers the Miami Dolphins for ESPN. He's going to join us in about 16 minutes. Going to talk Canes with Manny Navarro. I don't know, man. Talking Canes with Manny Navarro just feels right. You know, longtime Hurricanes beat writer for the Herald before he moved over to the Miami Heat for a few years. And no disrespect, he was doing excellent work covering the Heat, but I always felt like Navarro was one of my Canes guys. Now he's back covering the Canes for The Athletic. Doug Plagans will join us at 7:20. Talk some Panthers. He had media day today up at the BB&T Center. And Channing Crowder is going to join me to talk some college football. I mentioned Cameron Wolf. That was the first thing. Great to know that Tito's listening over there. It's already a rocky start for this guy.
I'm doing a lot over here, man.
Jeez.
It's been a rough day. I found out that there's more calories in a Caesar salad than a Big Mac.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I mean, I know that like a Caesar salad is one of those deceptive foods. You think this is a diet food. But, you know, like Caesar dressing is like packed with mayo, I think, which is something it's got like eggs and I think there is mayo in a lot of Caesar dressings. It's not healthy. But I wouldn't have thought it was worse than a Big Mac.
That's what I'm saying. There's three loaves of bread in a Big Mac.
Yeah, it's a lot. What do they call like the extra piece of bread in the middle? It's like the moist maker, the moisturizer or something. Seems very unnecessary, the extra piece of bread in the middle of a Big Mac.
I agree. I think if that's the one thing they should remove, if anything.
They should. If you'd like to get in tonight, share your infinite wisdom with us via the phone lines. 305-567-0560. 954-567-0560. Pound 560 on your cell. You can get at us on the Kendall Toyota and West Kendall Toyota text line at 560-22. But please don't text and drive. I try not to overreact like the betting public is to Sam Darnold and the Jets' performance on Monday night against Detroit. No question he looked really good after throwing that ugly pick six to start the game. If nothing else, I think that's a testament to his demeanor, the fact that he was able to recover from that and play damn near perfect the rest of the way, right, Darnold? The Jets' defense looks really good, but I try not to overreact to that because you came to find out that against the Lions, the Jets' defense knew exactly what the Lions' offense was going to do because Matthew Stafford's hand signals had not changed from a year ago. That's pretty pathetic. That's probably worse than, you remember years back when the Dolphins offense used to have the go, go, go? So what was it? When Tannehill said go, it was always a run. Go, go was always a pass or vice versa.
And Philbin said that there was no way any team would ever catch on to that.
Yeah, just like I'm sure the Jets or the Lions thought, you know what? Why would we bother coming up with all new hand signals? No one's going to learn that. We don't have to worry about it. We'll keep these ones around for 3 years and then we'll move on. So I try not to overreact to that. If nothing else, I think you're catching Darnold for the first time at the right time. If he does end up being an absolute stud, probably good to face him on the road for the first time in week 2. I think you still have a chance to rattle him. And, you know, okay, so he responded very well after throwing that interception to start the game on Monday night. But it's not like that's just something he never does. I mean, he had interception problems at USC. That was always the knock on Darnold. Great arm strength, great awareness, intelligent, student of the game, can make every throw, but there's the turnover problem. So it's not like that's something new for him. I would love to see Rashad Jones get his hands on a couple of those Sam Darnold passes this week. Yeah, the Jets are a 3-point favorite at the Meadowlands. You know, the whole thing about packing the road stadium, that goes both ways between the Dolphins and the Jets, right? Yeah, you know, people will laugh at a Dolphins-Jets game at Hard Rock Stadium because, oh, it's like 40% Jets fans in there. They've taken over Hard Rock Stadium. I got news for you. That goes the other way, too. A lot of Dolphin fans in the tri-state area up there. A lot of Dolphin fans in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. And I'm sure that there are a handful of great fans down here who make the trip up there. What do they call that? The MetLife Takeover?
Yeah, we're calling that the Dolphins MetLife Takeover, right?
We always do a good job traveling up there. I mean, you can say what you want to about, oh, Hard Rock Stadium, when the Jets are in town, there's a lot of opposing fans there. They say the same thing about us in New York. I got news for you. They say the same thing about us when the Dolphins make their annual trip to MetLife Stadium. There's always a ton of Dolphin fans in that crowd. So I want to hear what Adam Gase had to say today. A couple of notes injury-wise. Tito talked about these in the sports update. I don't like that Josh Sitton injury. That doesn't sit well with me, pun intended. Yeah, chalk one up for me. I just know how important he is. And this is a guy, there were injury concerns coming in. He's missed at least three games in each of the last two seasons. He's very important, not only in anchoring the left interior of that O-line as the left guard, but he and Laremy Tunsil have built a nice rapport. They had that coming together throughout training camp. I think he's very important to that O-line. I hope he can find a way to play. He has not participated in practice due to a shoulder injury for the last 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday. If Sitton cannot play, you would definitely have Ted Larson being the next guy up. Ted Larson would either come in and just be plugged into the left guard spot, or Jesse Davis would leave right guard to move to left guard, and Larson would come in and play right guard. So I think either way, the next guy up off the bench is going to be Ted Larson, but I really hope that Sitton can find a way to play because he is very important to that offensive line, man. And Devontae Parker back practicing this week. Adam Gase spoke extensively on that. I think this past Sunday showed us, and I know that there are going to be tougher games this year, and there are going to be games where you're going to want to get certain X plays from wide receivers that maybe aren't happening, and you're going to wonder, oh, I wonder if Devontae Parker could do more in this spot. I'm not saying the Dolphins receiving core is perfect, but didn't the Dolphins receiving core kind of show us this past Sunday that they can do pretty well without Devontae Parker? I mean, Kenny Stills had a studly day, and he's shown you over the last two-plus years in a Dolphins uniform he can be the number one at that position here. I really liked Albert Wilson's speed and versatility. I think Jakeem Grant is getting a lot better, and Danny Amendola, I think, is going to be your dependable slot guy, assuming he can stay healthy all year, which has been a big if for him over the years, but a healthy Danny Amendola, to me, is invaluable to that offense. And, yeah, you kind of have breathing room when it comes to your depth, even without Devontae Parker. And I think that whatever you get from a healthy Devontae Parker this year is the icing on the cake. It's a bonus. It's an added bonus this year if you can get something from Devontae Parker. And I wonder, and we'll ask Cam Wolf about this, if Devontae Parker just comes back and starts, what do you expect his snap count to be this week? Or have guys like Albert Wilson and Jakeem Grant earned more time on that field? So here's Adam Gase today. He'll start with Devontae Parker here on how Devontae really wants to get back on the field.
He's excited to get going. You know, when you don't play that first game, you're kind of itching to get to that first one. So I know that when he tells me that he's ready to go and he wants to go, that's when he's that emphatic about it, that's a good sign for us.
And onto the offensive line, Gase saying that, yeah, he'd be fine with Ted Larson filling in for Josh Sitton if necessary. Maybe.
him going in, that's was a main reason that, you know, we wanted him on this team, was if something ever happened to anybody and he went in the game, like, we were really, really comfortable with that, because we feel like he is probably a starter at a lot of different places, and we were lucky enough to have him here.
You know, people always try and draw conclusions to the early season positives and negatives, right? I kind of laugh when I hear people trying to break down who are the Miami Dolphins now after the victory over the Tennessee Titans. Do you try to make excuses for the win? Well, you know, you had the injury to Delanie Walker. You had Marcus Mariota getting injured in that game. 4 hours of lightning delays. That's not a real barometer. Other people saying, oh, no, that shows that these Dolphins are a playoff team. Here's Adam Gase saying that it really takes about four games to know who your team is.
Probably that first quarter, you're probably, by the end of that, if you stay healthy, you have a good idea of who you are and really what you can lean on and what you need to stay away from. But I do think it takes some games and some different defenses you play to kind of figure it out, like who can handle what.
Here's Gase praising the Jets' defense. They scored a couple of touchdowns against the Lions. Here's Gase on how they put a lot of pressure on quarterbacks.
When they do play base defense, they get great push. You know, they collapse it. There's a lot of the times five guys rushing and two guys off the edge and then three interior guys. And they can collapse it very quickly. And they do a good job of keeping the quarterback in the pocket. So it makes it tough to throw a lot of the shorter throws, the intermediate game, because the quarterback vision it's tough. And they are very disruptive.
Can you skip ahead, Tito, to number 7 for me from Adam Gase today? By the way, texters are writing in that 5,000 Dolphin fans are going to that game this year. MetLife takeover, the texter writes. Minka Fitzpatrick is going to have his first INT against Sam Darnold. I would take that. I would love that. They actually played against one another a few years ago in college. And I don't think Darnold was the starter in that game. I think he came in late because Alabama was just kicking that ass. So he did get some playing time late in that game. But here is Adam Gase going back to Devontae Parker. In case you were wondering, he says it seems like Devontae will play this week.
He seems fine. You know, I think he's itching to play. We went through today. He got involved in team reps. Now it's just me going in and asking Kyle, okay, what was the reaction? He hasn't complained about anything. He's been aggressive to get out there and catch as many balls as possible. He did a good job of staying in shape. So, I mean, he's running-wise, he's good. It's just I just got to get the info from Kyle.
Okay, so the 5,000 that the texter was talking about, it's a group called Dolphins NYC. So I love it. So those are the Dolphin fans. I think I incorrectly made it sound like those are the locals making the trip up there. But no, the texter writes in that it's a group in New York City, Dolphins NYC, that have gotten 5,000 people together to go to that game this Sunday. That's awesome. We also have the cocky Jets fan checking in, though. Dono, I'm not worried about the outcome of this game. As a Jets fan, the future looks bright. Soon we'll be on top of the AFC East for the next 10 years. I love it how, like, he's not just talking about the immediate future. Like, he's talking about a dynasty already, this Jets fan. Like, he already has the next decade of his life planned out, right? He's just been sitting there waiting for old Father Tommy Brady, Father Time Brady, to decline, to break down. Still isn't happening yet, but it's going to happen at some point. And the Jet fan is already planning out the next 10 years of dominance. I'm going to do a top 3 list later in the show. And the Jets kind of inspired this, right? Because, again, I don't want to overreact to their 48-17 dismantling of the Lions on Monday. But I think as a Jets hater, I do need to at least consider the possibility that the Jets might be getting good, right? I would hate to even entertain that thought. But I at least have to consider that, right? Like, there are certain teams that I dislike that I enjoy them being on the bottom of the barrel, right? Like, I dislike plenty of good teams, right? I despise the New England Patriots. They're great. I despise Real Madrid. They've been really good. Like, there are plenty of great teams that I despise. But then there are also bad teams that I hate. And I just love it when they suck, right? So my top 3 list in the 7 o'clock hour. Top 3 bad teams I would hate to see have a good season. And there may be a couple of New York teams in the running for that, because the New York Knicks are in the running for that as well. You know, the Florida State Seminoles, historically great. They were really bad last year. They look really bad so far this year. I would hate to see them get good again. But we'll talk more Dolphins with Cameron Wolf from ESPN next.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
And a couple of Jets fans texted in talking trash, but way more Dolphin fans in the NYC area who are texting me about this MetLife takeover coming up. We go out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline, bring in ESPN's NFL Miami Dolphins reporter Cameron Wolf, who joins us now. So, Cameron, your first regular season game covering the Miami Dolphins, you got to be part of history, my man. 7 hours, 8 minutes. I'm guessing for ESPN, you didn't have any deadlines you had to blow through for that, right?
Yeah, no. My newspaper days, I would have been sweating, but otherwise, yeah. It was just a long day.
Oh, man. So I want to start with a couple of things here injury-wise. Devontae Parker back in practice this week, but even without Devontae, the Dolphins don't have a problem at wide receiver. I really like what Albert Wilson is bringing to the table. Jakeem Grant is improving. Kenny Stills is already very solid. So assuming Devontae plays this week and Adam Gase says he expects him to, how do you see Parker fitting in and any sort of sense on what the snap count might be?
Yeah, I think you'll see Devontae probably coming in and rotating with Albert Wilson, Jakeem Grant, Danny Amendola, and seeing a split more between those guys. It may hurt, you know, Albert Wilson snaps and Jakeem Grant snaps a lot, but I don't think he'll take his full starter reps if he plays this week. You've got a guy who hasn't played in over a month, so you're going to want to get him, you know, back conditioning-wise. So I don't think you'll see, you know, 90-100% of the reps. I think you may see, you know, somewhere around half of the game for Parker and taking some reps from those other guys I mentioned.
You know, when Kenny Stills first arrived in Miami a few years back, I kind of thought, you know, this is a speed guy. He's going to fill a very specific role. But is it fair to say, Cameron, that he looks like a pretty complete number one wide receiver at this point?
I wrote about this week. I talked to Adam Gase and I asked him that same question. You know, Kenny's a veteran, but it seems like he still has ascension. And he said, yeah, we're trying to create him to being a 7 to 8 reception guy a game instead of just being a 4, you know, reception deep ball player. He said he thinks he has that skill set. He's been one of, if not the best slot receiver in the NFL over the last 2 years, and people don't really know that. So now that Jarvis Landry is gone, there's a lot more targets. There's a lot more versatility in the offense that opens up for Kenny to truly be, you know, everything he can be and not just a deep ball threat.
Yeah, I thought the offensive line looked really good on Sunday. We're talking with Cameron Wolf from ESPN. How concerned should Dolphins be that Josh Sitton, who sat out a couple of practices Wednesday and today, how concerned should they be that he won't play on Sunday? And if he doesn't play, how much does that hurt the line?
Yeah, definitely a little concerned. I mean, Josh Sitton was a great pickup for the Dolphins. He played well in week one. He's one of the guys Adam Gase has raved about as far as, you know, getting the continuity of that offensive line better. It's never a great sign when coaches are quiet about a midweek injury, and we really haven't heard much of anything about Josh Sitton's injury other than it's a shoulder injury. He hasn't practiced these 2 days. At this point, you're sort of under the inclination that he's not going to play, and you got to prep Ted Larson. And obviously that hurts you, particularly in the run game, an area where they had some strength in week one.
You know, Tannehill did some very good and some not so good this past Sunday. Like the 75-yard bomb to Kenny Stills was awesome. The interception to Malcolm Butler was kind of ugly. How did you grade out Tannehill's performance week one?
I think it was decent. I think considering that he hadn't played football in 637 days, you probably consider that performance a win, particularly because they won. I think they're going to want to see improvement. I think Tannehill admitted that this week. Gase did as well, particularly on that fade route that you mentioned. You've got to see a better ball from Tannehill. You've got to see more aggressiveness from Mike Gesicki. But he looked like the accurate quarterback that we've seen in the past. And, you know, 20 of 28 was a really good completion ratio. He looked like he had good rhythm with his receivers. And it looked like it kept the defense off guard because they didn't know what was coming. So if you get that sort of performance from Tannehill every week, it gives you a chance to win. And if you get better, then you're looking at a team that can be closer to what Gase thought they were going to be to start the season.
Was there anything in the Titans game, and maybe this could be something that the coaching staff and players talked about this week, but anything stand out to you as kind of a negative? Like, man, this is really something this team needs to improve upon.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is that we saw some glimpses in the second half of their struggles tackling, particularly speedy backs like Deion Lewis. He broke off a really big run late, and that could have been something that really hurt them down the stretch. Their linebacker and D-line crew were something we talked a lot about as a weakness coming into it, and they actually played pretty stout in the first half. But we saw some holes in the second half. So I would be a little concerned and want to make sure they shore that up against Isaiah Crowell and Bilal Powell this week. And then on the offensive end, you've just got to figure out how to finish drives. That interception to Gesicki, you've got to be able to close opponents out. I feel like they had the Titans on the rope a few times, and obviously the delays affected momentum. But you've got to be able to put teams away like that, because not every team is going to, you know, give you the opportunity to come out with a win. With the type of performance they put out Sunday.
You know, I try not to read too much into, you know, the Dolphins-Titans game, good and bad, the same way I try not to overreact to what I saw the Jets do to the Detroit Lions on Monday. I mean, that was an absolute massacre. But Sam Darnold, to me, after throwing that pick six, looked very good and very poised from that point forward. You think the Dolphins can and should get opportunities to really make him uncomfortable on Sunday?
Yeah, I think so. I actually think that, you know, they're going to be riding a little bit of a high because of how he played, and he played really well. But I do think Detroit had a lot of flaws in their scheme and a lot of their game. I do think the Dolphins will throw a little bit of, you know, a wrench into what he can do. I think you'll see more blitzes from the Dolphins. I think you'll see Cam Wake and Robert Quinn get a little bit more downhill on their pass rush and disrupt them a little more. And then ultimately, they're coming off a short week for your second opponent. You finally got film on Sam Darnold. I think you can have some success if you get a few turnovers against him. And he's a guy who's shown in college that he's willing to give you a few turnovers if you mix up the coverage.
Yeah, do you think the Browns and even the Giants are going to regret not drafting that guy?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Browns got their own quarterback in Baker Mayfield, and they think he's going to be the guy. And we haven't seen him yet, so we've got to give him every chance. But I think the Giants, even now, you know, I think that was the incorrect choice in April, and I think it is now. You've got to get your franchise quarterback when you got an opportunity. And I think he's a guy who's going to be a franchise quarterback at some point. I was talking to T.J. McDonald about it in the locker room. He's a USC guy just like Sam Darnold, and he said, hey, I thought this kid had it in college, and I'm even more convinced after week one. So those guys don't come around often. You don't have a lot of chances to pick in the top three. And I know Saquon Barkley is a great player, but he's a running back, and I think the Giants made a mistake, particularly them, not taking him at number two.
Give us your scouting report for the Dolphins offense going up against the Jets defense. You know, they looked very good against Detroit, but then we find out that the hand signals hadn't changed from last year and they knew exactly what Stafford was calling. That sounds like an absolute nightmare. So again, I don't want to overreact to that performance, but I know a Todd Bowles team is always going to have an aggressive and well-coached defense. So how do you think the Dolphins match up with them?
Yeah, like you mentioned, Bowles' defense are always going to be really well prepared. Adam Gase said he wasn't worried about the sign signal thing. I think the biggest asset the Dolphins may be able to use is their versatility on offense. I think it's been the first time in a while we've seen them have a plethora of different weapons that can hurt you on any given game. You know, Jakeem Grant has the big special teams play. He's probably their fifth receiver when Devontae Parker comes back, and he's one of their weapons. So they've got five legitimate receivers that all have different skill sets that all can be interchanged and really catch the defense off guard. We saw Albert Wilson in the backfield last week. We saw Frank Gore and Kenyon Drake in the backfield at the same time. I think we'll see a continued situation where Adam Gase tries to mix it up and keep the linebackers, particularly with their feet stuck in concrete because they don't know exactly what's going on. I think that's a way to attack a team that looks fast and aggressive is to slow them down with misdirection.
I really appreciate the time here from Cameron Wolf, ESPN reporter covering the Dolphins and the National Football League. Follow him on Twitter at Cameron Wolf, an E there at the end of Wolf. Thank you so much, man, and we're very happy to have you on the beat down here. I love reading your work.
All right, thanks, guys.
Good stuff there, and well, listen, man. First game on the Dolphins beat gets the longest game in NFL history, right? Those of us have been down here. You kind of expect something wacky like that to happen when the Miami Dolphins are playing. Just think about last year. You had a linebacker go AWOL. You had the first game of the season actually get changed. You lost your bye week due to a hurricane. Offensive line coach snorting the white powder, and he filmed it and then sent it to a stripper. A lot of weird stuff happened last season. Jay Cutler was your starting quarterback for the entire year. Woo! After a year like 2017, nothing in 2018 should surprise you. So the longest game in NFL history being played here was certainly not something that I didn't expect. We'll talk some Canes when we come back. Don't overlook Toledo. I know you're probably laughing in your car just hearing me say that. Malik Rozier is the starting quarterback again this week. Let me throw this out there, right? Because I think we're all hoping that at some point in that game, Nikosi Perry gets in and, you know, gets to get his feet a little more wet. You know, he finally played for the first time last week. Let's get him in there for a few series, see what he can do. If Nikosi Perry gets some playing time on Saturday, is it more likely because, A, the Hurricanes are just destroying Toledo, and in the second half, the score is out of reach, so Malik Rozier can comfortably sit, Perry gets in for mop-up duty for more experience? That's option A. Or is it option B? And I do not want option B. Let me make this clear. Option B would be Malik Rozier is struggling. The score is very competitive. Mark Richt has to go to the bench to create a spark. That you figure, you know what? It's kind of like the Pittsburgh game last year. Malik Rozier is struggling. We need to put a different look out there. This time you've got a much better option on the bench than Evan Sheriff's. Does he have to go to Nikosi Perry out of desperation? Or do you think Nikosi Perry gets in the game this week because Miami is comfortably ahead? Tito, I know you're a big Nikosi Perry fan.
I'm in the Nikosi Hive. I'm all in it. But
is that what we're calling that?
Yeah,
the Hive?
Yeah, Nikosi Hive. Hashtag Nikosi Hive. You can check it on Twitter. It's a real thing.
I feel so out of touch that I'm the last person to know about that.
Oh, no. I mean, not really. He's been the backup quarterback.
Well, yeah, but you're telling me, like, it's a thing. It's a hashtag on Twitter, the Nikosi Hive, and I'm the last person to know about it.
I mean,
I bet you the Beast knows about that. He beat me to that one, probably.
Possibly. I wouldn't doubt it. I would not doubt that.
Oh, man.
What's Rozier's leash? Like, what is his cutoff? Like, it's like, we're down two scores. We're down three scores.
God, man, are you talking against Toledo?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if they're down two scores against Toledo, then the leash is up.
Right. Like, if he has if they don't do anything in the first quarter, that's it. Like, you pull the leash. That's it.
I think you have to. I mean, I hope that I can't even fathom that sort of a scenario. But, yeah, I think the leash is like that. I think if you're down two scores to Toledo in any part of that game, right? I mean, maybe if you're down two scores in the first quarter, Rick will give him some time to dig out of it. If you're down two scores late in the second quarter, I think that the leash is done. You're out of slack there. We will talk some Canes when we come back. This guy's back on the Canes beat, Manny Navarro. Where he belongs, man. We'll talk to Manny Navarro from The Athletic next here on QAM. Radio.com.
Radio.com.
Somebody texted in about the Toledo game this Saturday. High noon in Toledo. The Toledo game has Kane Trapp written all over it. Now, if Al Golden were still coaching this team, I'd probably say that's a loss, right? A noon game in Toledo, Ohio. But listen, you know, people 2 years ago, 2016, when Miami traveled to the Giant Killers, Appalachian State, when they traveled to App State, a lot of people were saying, no, that's a loss. That's a trap game for the Canes. No way they're winning that. And they went out there and they took care of business. I think they will do the same at Toledo on Saturday. And we go back out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. I know this man hasn't left town, but he did leave the Canes beat for a hot second. And I feel like all is right in the world again with Manny Navarro back on the Miami Hurricanes beat. Food tastes better. I don't feel like I'm living in a strange parallel universe anymore.
We got to get some of Manny's takes on food. I'm sure he would be more than willing to partake.
Yeah, and it's not to say this guy didn't do great work covering the Miami Heat, because he did, but I don't know, man. Like, for as long as I can remember being in this business, Manny Navarro was a Canes beat writer, and it's happy to have him back. He's now with The Athletic. Manny, how you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing great, man. Very happy to be back on your show and talking Canes football.
And a lot has changed since you were on the beat. There's an indoor practice facility now. Yeah. You know, Al Golden is no longer patrolling the sidelines. I mean, how does it feel to be a bigger part of this current era of Canes football?
I feel like I came back at the right time, man. I mean, in all honesty, I looked at my options. I could cover the Heat, I enjoyed covering. Don't get me wrong. It was fun 3 years on that beat. Or I could come back when Mark Richt was starting to put this thing back together and putting them in the right direction. I said, all right, that's what I want to do. I want to be around the Canes when they climb back up the mountaintop. So, I'm happy with my decision, and I'm excited to be working for the Athletic.
I can remember there was even a time, I don't know, a year or two ago, where I wanted to get Manny on the show. And I knew I wanted to get him on to talk the Heat because that was what he was covering. But in the text message, because I knew I was texting Manny Navarro, I said, hey, can you come on at such and such time and talk Canes? Right? It was just muscle memory for me. And, like, you right. had to awkwardly write back to say, oh, I don't cover the Canes anymore. That's not what I meant to ask you, but I'm just so used to asking you on to talk Canes.
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, that's what I was known for. I did it for, I think, almost 12 years with Susan Miller Degnan for the Herald, covering it together with her and covered basketball. And then when Joseph Goodman left the Herald after his 4 years, he had the four best years, by the way, on the Heat, the LeBron
Ooh,
years. I got the 3 years after that. After he took off, that's when I got the Heat job. And look, it was a great experience. It was fun covering the Heat and covering pro basketball. But this is where my heart's always been. It's been football. It's been the South Florida, base, the recruiting, all the kids that come out of this area that I've known for so many years, 23 years at the Herald. So I just feel like this is my wheelhouse.
And there's no shortage of stories to cover this year, Canes-wise. I mean, let's start at the quarterback position, Manny. You tweeted out an incredible stat on, Malik Rozier's lack of efficiency so far. Maybe you can expand on that a little bit. And what do you think the leash is going to be now for Malik Rozier, now that we're seeing, N'Kosi Perry get more snaps in practice and finally got a chance to play last week?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was interesting to hear Mark Richt this week say that, they're going to play the quarterback who helps them win. I think for a while, he was sort of, throwing his support behind Malik, and I understand why. He's a senior. The other guys hadn't seen the field yet. They have to sort of understand the offense, be able to handle some complex defensive schemes. But what I wrote about today was just sort of painting the picture of just how, sort of behind Malik is in terms of other quarterbacks nationally, in terms of accuracy. And some of the numbers that really stood out to me, forget completion percentage. It's on target. How many of his passes get to where they're supposed to be? And the area that opened my eyes was just when he doesn't feel any pressure. Because obviously every quarterback's going to be pressured. They're going to have to escape the pocket. You can understand when a guy throws a bad pass when he's under, duress. But when you look at Malik's numbers, I mean, he's way back in the pack in terms of Division I quarterbacks, not just FBS quarterbacks, but Division I, meaning FCS quarterbacks too, when it comes to throwing passes on target when he doesn't have any pressure around him. And that to me just, it sort of paints the picture of what's sort of holding this team back, because obviously it doesn't all fall on Malik. There's a lot of different issues this team has. The offensive line, they lost two important guys graduation last year on the left side of that line. They've had to reshuffle it. They haven't exactly played great. But you look at what's separating Miami from becoming an elite team, and it's elite quarterback play. They need Malik to play better. Look, last year when they were 10-0, he wasn't putting up ridiculous numbers, but he was playing good enough for them to win games.
Right.
And that's what they need him to do again. They need him to get back to just not hurting them, not missing open receivers, making the plays that he's supposed to make. If he does that, then you know what? He's a good starter for Miami. But if he's the guy who we've seen here over these last five starts with the three dating back to last year, then you're going to see Miami struggle. And so I hope for Malik's sake, because I really like the kid a lot, I hope he can somehow get back into a better groove and this offense can get back into a better groove.
Manny, people have been texting me about on the road in Toledo at noon being a trap game. What should concern Canes fans most about this matchup on Saturday?
Well, I mean, look, I think we saw against LSU what happened when Trajan Bandy went down. There's a pretty big gap between the number two cornerback on this UM roster and the number three cornerback, who's Javonte Dean, in terms of just guys that, who can make plays and that you can really trust in the secondary. Well, I love the freshmen that they've recruited, Al Blade, DJ Ivy. I love the guys that, that are going to be in this program for the next few years. They're still true freshmen. I mean, they're still just getting their feet wet. And this receiving core for Toledo is really good. They've got three experienced guys who all racked up a tremendous amount of catches last year. And look, this is a hungry football team. They won the MAC championship, won 11 games last year. You're going into a stadium that, yes, it's only, I think, 30,000 deep, you know, but it's a place that's sort of been waiting for an opportunity like this. And I looked it up. You know, Toledo, I think, is 8-3 against top 25 teams ranked 18 or higher. When they play the higher-ranked team, wow, not very good. But 8-3 when they play teams ranked 18th or higher. And this is a Miami team that, let's face it, yes, they were ranked 8th in the preseason, but we've seen with Malik that they're, you know, on the edge of being a top 25 team. So, to me, this is a dangerous game for all of those reasons. They're a well-coached team. Jason Campbell does a good job. They make plays on special teams. So this is, yeah, you're right. I mean, if you want to talk about trap game, this is it.
So, you know, Manny, 2 years ago, the Canes played a road game at Appalachian State. They're playing a road game at Toledo this weekend. I understand why they do this, because you save a ton of money when you schedule a home and home versus just having the team come to your place for a one-off. But you don't see a lot of big programs schedule home and homes with teams like Toledo and Appalachian State. Is this ever going to stop, or is this just the reality that, you know, Miami football, they have less donors than some of the other big programs, so they have to save money where they can?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the way it is for a private school in Coral Gables. I mean, Miami, as much money as they've been able to raise, and you got to give their administration a ton of credit for what they've been able to do to build that indoor practice facility and everything else, and pay for better assistant coaches, they're not flush with cash, okay? They're not the Alabamas and the Michigans and the Texases of the world. This is a private school that has to raise its money, and you saw it this summer. You saw it when their defensive line coach went to Alabama. Alabama opened up the checkbook and made sure to take them away, and so Miami was in the middle of paying for that indoor practice facility. I'm sure they opened the wallet to keep Ron Dugans and probably gave Manny Diaz more incentives to stick around. But, I mean, this is the way college football is. The schools with money are going to be in a better position than you are. And so that's why the Canes have to do this. That's why they schedule this way. And this game, from what I understand, was, like, scheduled 10 years ago. So,
yeah,
this has been in the books for a long time, and it's just part of the deal. They can't act like Alabama and Michigan and everybody else and just say, hey, come to our house and that's it. They've got to return the favor.
Amon Richards not going to play this week. Now, right now, this is looking like Jeff Thomas's receiving core. But, I mean, how much can they use Amon back once ACC games start?
Well, I mean, look, you're talking about a veteran guy who's uber talented, who's got first-round NFL talent, you know. But Amon has to sort of prove, I think, to NFL scouts now, after what he went through last year and then getting hurt, you know, in the first game, that he can stay healthy. Because as soon as you have that second injury, the antenna goes up, right? I mean, scouts start to look at you and say, is this guy just going to be injury prone? Should we really invest? So, to me, Amon's got to prove it. He's got to come back. And look, he's got some good receivers that are playing right now while he's out. I think Brian Hightower, I think Pope, the other freshman they got out of Miami Southridge, and those guys are legit freshmen. Those freshman tight ends look really, really good. And Jeff Thomas has just been otherworldly, you know, outside of running too fast on routes every now and then.
Yeah, I'm sure that wasn't an excuse or anything. Now,
Lorenzo
Lingard, you know, his biggest run against Savannah State, he was virtually untouched. I mean, he made the great moves to get himself into space, but that wasn't a huge test for him. But Lingard, I mean, listen, his reputation, he's a five-star recruit. He's got track speed. He's also a track star. I try not to overreact to what I saw him do against Savannah State, but I've got to think Lingard is going to end up being a pretty big part of this offense.
Well, he's got to be. I think probably by the halfway point of the season, if you can teach him how to pass protect and you can trust him back there, then you can put him on the field. That's always the issue with running backs. I mean, Don Solinger, and that's all he used to talk to me about back in the day when he was coaching the running backs here. I'm not going to put a guy out there who can't protect the quarterback. And so, as good as Lingard is, until he gets that part of the job down, I think you're only going to see him sparsely. You're going to see him maybe, you know, maybe Mark Richt figures out a way to get him on the return team. Maybe he runs a reverse for him. I don't know, you know, but he's a kid that has to be on the field eventually. He's obviously gifted. He's got great vision, great explosion. And, I mean, look, you put him and Jeff Thomas together on the field. If I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm, like, urinating down my leg. I mean, those two guys, those two guys are just unbelievably fast and gifted. And so they've got to figure out here in the next 2 years how to get those guys on the field together and just let them expose defenses.
Now, I don't know if The Athletic ever asked you to make predictions, but on Sports Talk Radio, this is how I make my living, Manny. How do you think how do you think this game Saturday in Toledo is going to play out?
Well, I think it's going to be a nail biter, and I think a lot of it's going to have to do with Malik and the passing game, you know, and how comfortable he looks, and whether or not Miami's able to establish a running game. You know, as good as Lingard looks, I think the starting running back, Travis Homer, and those guys, they haven't run the ball extremely well. Through the first six quarters of the season, they've been averaging 2.4 yards a carry. You know, to me, that's a little troubling. And obviously, it's not just them. It's the offensive line, too. But if Miami can get the running game going, take some pressure off of Malik, and he's not out there throwing picks, they should win this game. I would pick him to win by 10 or 14 points. But if he's struggling, man, we could have a nail-biter on Saturday. So right now, if you're asking me, my prediction, I'd pick the Canes. I'll pick them like 41-34.
Wow, okay. Well, let me throw a scenario at you, and just so you know, this is not sports-related. I got to get into a food topic with you,
sure.
Right? Let's say you're traveling to a Canes game. You're at a hotel, maybe in Toledo, Ohio. They've got a very sparse continental breakfast. You've got to choose between one of these two things, right? You can only have one. Do you go with a biscuit or a bagel?
Oof. You know, most of the time, biscuits to me are dry. You got to get them at a good place, like Popeyes. So I'd probably go with the bagel, but if it's hotel food, man, I'm sure none of it is good. I'm sure you're going to probably have to look for a Starbucks or something else out there to get yourself a good breakfast.
Yeah, you see one of those continental breakfasts that are so depressing. And like you, yeah, I'm saying, you know what? I don't care if I have to pay like $8.99 for a tiny breakfast sandwich at Starbucks. Sometimes you got to do it.
Sometimes you do. You do. And that's what I'm going to miss about the NBA beat. Most of those hotels in the big cities, you could get yourself a great breakfast. Covering the ACC, going to places like Toledo, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to have that much luck.
Manny Navarro is taking his talents to The Athletic. Miami Hurricanes beat writer and columnist. Follow him on Twitter at Manny_Navarro. I don't know what that is. Manny_Navarro. Thanks so much for your time, as always.
Thanks for having me on, Donald. Take care.
Good stuff, man. Yeah, so Tito Banach is obsessed with this. This is like his Sophie's Choice food question. Do you take a biscuit or a bagel? Now, okay, you can throw wrinkles and variables at it, but if I am to assume that they are both of reasonable quality, I think I'd take a biscuit over a bagel. I do. And there are a lot of ways to dress up a bagel, but just for the pure, unadulterated flavor, you give me a good biscuit or a good bagel, and I know you New Yorkers are going to get angry. Oh, bro, you never tried a bagel in Brooklyn, bro. Well, no, I haven't. You're right. But I would take a good Southern biscuit over a good quality bagel. I would.
I feel like everything you can put on a bagel that makes like bagel sandwiches good, you can put it on a biscuit if you really wanted to. Like an egg and cheese bagel, you can make an egg and cheese biscuit.
Yeah, you know what? I prefer an egg and cheese biscuit over an egg and cheese bagel. Yeah.
Like I like bagels. I like biscuits.
I mean, listen,
but
I
biscuits are a natural preference. What makes a bagel so special?
They're very heavy also. Like they're very dense. Like a bagel has probably like eight times, this is my scientific facts, a bagel has eight times the carbohydrates of like a regular piece of bread of the same size. I pulled that out of my you-know-what, but I think that's probably about correct.
I'm going to take it as fact.
I will take that as fact as well. 7:20, we'll talk Panthers with Doug Plagans. Coming up next, take your calls, and I'll give you my top three list. Top three bad teams I don't want to see have a good season. The Alex Dono Show continues.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.